Welcome to the Round 16 Supercoach Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus, and this week we're not joined by FB Donkey, who's away in WA on holidays, but we have two very capable replacements, and they've already filled in like this so far once this year, so Mark's slacking a little bit. but we're welcoming Dunny back to the show.
Thanks, mate. Good to be back.
And Faz as well. Welcome back.
Good to be back, fellas.
So it's actually a good timing because we catch you guys just after the buys and we get to have a tally of how you've went, and hopefully you guys have taken the opportunity to shoot up the rankings, and I'm sure you have. So why don't we start off with a personal update for the three rounds, really, for the entire buy period. And Dunny, you can kick us off.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I had a pretty good buy round period, I think. I had 2018, a 1901, and an 1824 this week. So an average of 1914 across the 3 weeks. So pretty happy with that. Last time I was on the show, I was languishing in the very low depths of the 50,000 range. I've lifted myself up now to be just inside the top 15,000. So progressing towards the finish line, hopefully. Made quite a few trades, though. I've got only got 8 trades left at the moment, but the only sort of guys on field that I'd be looking to upgrade now would be like Kerridge. I'm playing Petrarca on field until Barlow comes back, and I've got Liberatore and Wells as really the only other guys that I'd probably consider upgrading at this point.
Nearly into the 4-digit mark with your ranking, Dunny, so that's very nice. And I think 8 trades gives you the most trades out of any of us frequent on the podcast. So you're positioned well, at least, Dunny.
Thanks, mate.
To finish with a wet sail. So, Faz, how'd you go over the buys?
Yeah, I think I would have been a bit happier coming on last week rather than this week. as with, I think, a few people out there, had a bit of a quieter one on the last round of the buys. Only had 18 playing, so that was a 17.79, which all up my average is a bit shy of Dunny's. I got 18.93 average. I just checked. I didn't actually manage to crack the 2,000 over the 3 weeks, which is a bit of a shame, but, you know, not too far off at least. Went pretty hard as well with the trades. I think I used 8 of the possible 9 across the 3 weeks. At least made some nice improvements to the team. Jamie McMillan has gone and he will never return. Max Gorn came in on the weekend for Blikov, so it's a nice little upgrade there. But as we're going to get into later in the show, I've still got a few sort of not quite premiums in my team. I've got Kerridge, as Dunny does. I've got Libba, and I've also got Marcus Adams down back. So with 7 trades left, it might be stretching it to get a full premium team by the end of the season. But yeah, we'll touch on that a bit more later.
Yeah, and that is the main sort of crux for this week's show. We are looking at how to complete your team, or whether you should be completing your teams as such with full premiums with a limited amount of trades. Where do you stop exactly, and which of those marginal players should you trade out, and which should you hold and sort of run out the season with? Personally, I used 3 trades this round, so that puts me down to 7, Dunny, 1 trade behind you. I scored 18.22 with Pendlebury as captain, and that moved me in 70 spots to 521st. And across the buys, I scored 57.71. So that's just marginally in front of you, Faz, 100 points. I think Dunny's 50 points behind. So we all scored reasonably close. Unfortunately, and we've got to mention this even though he's away. Mark, he pipped us all, and he scored 59.41, so beat us by a fair bit. Ooh. He scored 170 points more than me across the buys, so he's sitting at 240th after the buys, and he'd be fairly happy about that, I think. All right, enough talking about Mark now. We'll move to a quick group update. 2039 was the top score in our group for the week, and that was Victoria's Renegade, so well done to you. And after the buys, thought it'd be a good time to sort of rehash where our group leaders are at. So Darren's, I already did this, is 5th, so he tops our group. But of course, Lewis's Talk in Flags is at 1st, and we'd mentioned he's in one of our leagues as well. So they're both very much in it to win it. And we've got 3 other coaches in the top 100, and that gives them a fairly good shot. We've still, you know, 8 rounds to play. That's Adams RD FC at 27th, Luke's Hacienda at 43rd, and Jared's Falcons at 68th. So all 3 of those blokes moved into the top 100 over the bye, so big congratulations to them. In terms of our leagues, we dropped slightly and we relinquished the number 1 league overall, but we still have 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, and we're only 2nd by 57 points. So that's barely 3 points a coach across the league, and hopefully we can grab that position back. All right, we'll move on to the actual conversation topics for the week now. We'll start off with the injury and suspension questions and then move through general trade strategy questions and then the actual trade outs and trade ins. So injury and suspension question. The first one we have off the run sheet is from Billy Brown on Facebook. What should we do with Daniel Wells if he's not back this week? So he's listed as a test. I think he's training this week with the hope of playing this weekend. Even if he misses this week, considering you've already held him for, what, 2 injured weeks across the byes, you should very much continue to hold on to Daniel Wells if you've already held on to him for these last couple. Gents, do you agree with that?
I traded Wells out during the bye period. I did a swap for Dilidio after the round 13 bye, and even then I wasn't confident that 2 extra weeks of Dilidio scoring would even outscore Wells. He's been in that hot a form recently. So yeah, I think if it's potentially one more week out, I think you hold off because the payoff could be that good at the end.
All right, we'll move on to the next question then, and this one's from Richard Stone or at General Hodge 15. He has a premium team including Barlow, but he only has 6 trades left. So would you consider trading or holding Barlow? And I think this is a fairly similar situation to Daniel Wells. If you've already held him for 1 week, surely you continue holding. Dunny, your thoughts on Barlow?
Yeah, I'm a Barlow owner and also a Wells owner. But look, if Barlow's only going to be out for probably another, say, 2 weeks and you've only got 6 trades left, I'd probably be holding for now. You just don't know what's going to come up, of course, and what other major injuries we might get. If you were sitting sort of somewhere north of 8-9 trades, then maybe you consider moving him on.
All right, we will move on to the next question, and this one is from Nick Luya or at Nick Luya 1 on Twitter. Now that Zaka is looking like he may get suspended this week, and since he's asked that question, he has been confirmed as suspended for 1 match, should we cut him for the rest of the season? It'd be interesting to hear your take, Faz, but my opinion of Zaka is he doesn't really quite cut it as a premium midfielder, and so I probably would have traded him around the buys, and I now that he's suspended and just scored a 46 in round 15, I'd probably definitely look to trade him.
During the most recent Essendon games, I have had my attention sort of elsewhere. I've been putting the TV on, but doing some other things as well. I know that we watched the game together on Thursday night, Marcus, and I'd said 88 points was the tip, and as much as it looked like I might have been wrong for most of the night, it ended up being quite close. So can't claim to have been watching Zaka terribly closely recently, but yeah, his scoring's definitely dropped off from the lofty heights at the start of the season, and he's shouldering quite an extra load that he's never had to do before. He's never played this many midfield minutes before, so I think it probably just taking a bit of a toll, and I don't expect to see an uplift in the last few games of the season. So with this 1 week suspension, it might be a good time to move him on.
All right, we'll move on to the next injury. And this one isn't actually a question because as we're recording, we're sort of just flipping around a little bit on afl.com.au, and Faz realized that Marcus Adams has been ruled out for at least the next 2 games, it says here, with a foot injury. That is a little bit concerning for people that have him on field. I think if you do have Marcus Adams on your bench, then he's not a necessary trade out, especially if you're low on trades, and especially considering that they're not a whole bunch of brilliant trade-in targets at the moment. But if he is on field, do you blokes reckon that he's a must trade out if he's your, for example, D6? Dunny, we'll get your opinion first, and then Faz, you actually have Adams on field, so you can tell us what you're actually going to do.
Look, for me, once again, it's going to depend on what you've got in terms of bench cover. If you've got Adams on field, and let's say Ruggles has scored okay recently, Collins has scored okay. If you're low on trades, and how long does it say it is? 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
If you're sort of down around that 5-6 trade mark, you'd probably consider trying to cover him with one of those guys. But for me, if you've got the cash, you probably should be looking to trade because you're going to need to upgrade one of those 3 guys at some point anyway. So might as well do it now. I think I went around in a circle there, but anyway.
Yeah, I think I like where you got to there at the end, Donny. I'm probably looking to trade him when I've got 7 trades left, so I'm probably not quite at the point where I need to be saving every last trade. His scoring has definitely dropped off the last little bit. It's really hurt me across the byes that he's only scored a 62 and a 50 in his last 2 games with the bye in the middle. The problem being that his price is right down at 360,000, so probably going to end up taking 2 trades if I want to turn him into anybody decent. So yeah, that'll be a bit of a challenge.
If you've only got a few trades left, that's going to be a real choice if you haven't got any cash in the bank.
I think most teams would be in that position. I'd say that they use it all up across the byes to try and max out the scores for last week.
He's not an ideal D6. You could leak up to, potentially 20 points a game. with a player like Adam. So even with only 8 rounds left, that's still 160 points. And at this point of the season, you take that in a trade, especially compounded by the fact that you're going to have to play a rookie in his place for 2 weeks. So even if you're low on trades, I'd say push it and bring in a premium replacement. Even if it takes a downgrade to complete an upgrade, I would probably do that. If you didn't have cash and you were looking to side swap him, the players around his price tag that I think are probably most attractive include Matthew Suckling, Burgoyne and Birchall, Tom McDonald. That's probably about it that I'd be looking at.
I think that says it all there, Marcus. You know, there's not a lot around at that price.
Given the choice between double trading and, let's say, moving from 6 to 4 and bringing in a Doherty or a Laird or a Simpson, instead of single trading and only going down to, let's say, 5 trades and bringing in a player like Suckling or Burgoyne or Birchall, which side of the equation would you guys lean toward? Double trading to get the better premium and really push your luck with 4 trades, or sit on one more and take a subpar premium?
I think I've probably said it on previous shows, I just don't feel all that confident with some of the guys up there, like the Cade Simpsons, and don't see Cade Simpson keeping up 106 average when he's never really averaged above 95 before. So I might be thinking about just taking a punt on one of the guys down there.
Yeah, I think at that number of trades, I sort of tend to agree with you there.
I guess then the question becomes, if you're only going to pick up a player that's averaging, you know, around the 85, maybe 90 mark, is that worth the trade considering Adams is averaging fairly similarly already?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think given that sort of evidence, you can make a pretty good case to hold if you've got some good backup.
Well, we're sort of figuring it out as we go here. I think if I had to land it at one point, I was forced to make a decision right now, I would probably try the double upgrade to move to a player like a Simpson or a Laird. I don't think you need to go to Doherty. You could probably pick up the upgrade for about 100K and go with somebody that at least you have a bit more confidence with. I know you weren't sure if Pittard was a premium, for example, Dunny, but he's still averaging 95, and I'd be a hell of a lot more confident bringing a player like that in instead of an 85 averager. So I think personally, I would take the risk. And if I was in the situation where I didn't have enough to upgrade to a true premium and I had to sort of side swap to a really marginal pick like a Shannon Hearn or something, I would probably just hold Adams and ride out the rookie score in that situation. If you really don't want to take the risk, I think you're better off taking the risk on Adams than taking the risk on spending a side swap on a similarly marginal player. We'll move off the injury and suspension questions then and onto the more sort of general trade advice question. So this is more in terms of total trade numbers, what to do more holistically, and then we'll get into the actual trade in and trade out target. So the first question here is from Nick Lork, or at the Unreal Nick on Twitter. He has 5 trades left, reliable bench cover, but on field is a little bit incomplete. So I'm assuming that means he has a Carriage or Adams or that sort of type. Does he trade in that situation or does he not trade? So I think first off, addressing if you had 5 trades and an Adams type, I think a double trade in that situation is probably not really palatable. Even if you wanted to push it, going down to 3 trades with sort of 8 rounds to go seems a little bit risky. If you had Adams and 5 trades, I would be very tempted to probably hold in that situation if you can't upgrade to anyone that you're confident in. Let's say you didn't have Adams though, and you were considering trading out a Carriage or a Tippin Woody type. What would you do with 5 trades left? Would you potentially push it and upgrade or hold on?
I'm just sort of pulling a number from anywhere here, but I'd say 4 trades seems like the minimum I'd want to be going down to at this point in the year. I know that Nick said that he's got reliable bench cover, but if anything, I think the story from this year is that there really isn't much reliable bench cover this year. Even a guy like Jack Trengove that we're all pretty excited to be bringing into our teams right around the bye period to hopefully give us cover, he got dropped last week. And so if you had enough cash to do one more upgrade, I could endorse that, but I wouldn't want to see people going down to 3 trades at this point in the year.
I think with 5 trades left, you'd only really spend the trade if you can hit a premium with the cash you have left that is sufficiently worth the upgrade. And that's a team-by-team decision. But basically, the guys I'd be looking at with only 1 trade and not much cash in bank are a Liberatore to Treloar trade. That costs you 20,000, and that side swap may be worthwhile doing even if you go down to 4 trades.
Just to jump in, even a Liberatore Parker, you actually make money on that trade.
Yep. Wow. Exactly.
I might do that trade.
Yeah. Carriage to Franklin, or Carriage trades to Motlop. These are the trades I'd be considering with five trades and going down to four trades. There might be some merit in those decisions. However, if you are trading in the back line and, for example, there's not really any cheap backline options available, all of a sudden that trade decision becomes a whole lot less palatable. So for Adams, who we've already been through, if you don't have the cash to upgrade him to a true premium, you might be better off just sitting on your hands in that situation. So with five trades left, I think you got to look at the premium you can actually hit with the cash you have. If you're trading in an average premium, you're not really gaining anything there. All right, the next question here is from Shannon Swan. His question is where to go with six trades left and a fully upgraded team. So this is sort of a different situation, and he's asking whether or not he continues to look for that extra 10 to 20 points a week, or he just sits tight. So in my situation, for example, I could trade a wing guard who's probably not quite a true premium to somebody who is a true premium, like a Brett Delidio. But I think with six trades left, if you have a true premium team and all you're dealing with is marginal premiums, like a Green instead of Delidio, or Green instead of Zorko, or Gray or Pritis instead of Pendlebury, I would probably hold tight in that situation. Dunny, would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I think, you know, a couple of injuries or someone gets put out to pasture for the rest of the year, you know, all of a sudden you've got nothing left. If you've got what you consider a fully upgraded team, then I would probably sit tight for, you know, at least the next 3 weeks, maybe four, before I started burning those trades in something other than an injury or a suspension problem.
That's a good call, because I mean, 10 to 20 points with only 8 rounds to go only nets you 80 to 160 points. And you know, when we talk about the value of a trade over the course of the season, it tends to diminish, but as an average you'd be hoping to get about 200 points per trade. So you know, 160 is probably palatable at the end of the year, but anything less than that and you really start to question whether or not that trade is worthwhile. So if you're upgrading premiums or side swapping premiums, that's dangerous at any point in the season. You know, the premium you trade out could overperform and the premium you trade in could start underperforming. That already carries inherent risk. And then you add on the fact that you only have 8 weeks to see the benefits out. So I think, you know, if you have a full premium team as such, even with six trades, even with eight trades, I'd probably just sit on them until you have an injury. And when you have an injury, trade really aggressively. Now you don't have to hold on to 2 week injuries and cop the score reductions that everybody else has to because they've pushed their team too far.
And if you look at it, for example, Mark, you say you might pick up 160 points. So let's say, you know, we're a bit later in the season and someone goes down and you're looking, you have to go from whatever score they've had and you've got no trades left, you've got to bring Tom Phillips on the field for his 28th. So, you know, if you've lost a Dangerfield, a Pendlebury or a Parker, you know, you're potentially losing 100, 120 points in just 1 week.
This just takes experience and it takes a little bit of nerve because, you know, you can see that instant gain when you make a short-term trade. But what you're talking about and the risk you're talking about, Dunny, is far more real and far more scary than, you know, the potential for a small advantage here or there.
All right. We've all learnt the hard way, mate.
Yes, that's very true, Dunny. All right, we'll move on to this next question here. And this is from Richard Berry. He's in the extremely fortunate position where he has 9 trades left. He still has 2 to 3 upgrades left to do and he's going for league wins. So this is kind of a different perspective. If you've been a slower burner and you're going for league wins, do you continue to use your trades over the next few weeks to complete your team, or do you actually hold your trades? You know, I'm not really a league expert, but from where I sit, it really does depend on where you're sitting on the ladder. If you're sort of competing and you're sitting at about 6 to 10 struggling to get into the top 8, you probably need to use those 9 trades aggressively, complete your team, and give yourself the best shot to end up in finals. But if you're top of the ladder, for example, or you have top 4 spot fairly comfortably locked up, and I think there's only 4 games left for the rest of the Supercoach home and away season, then you might not actually want to trade. Dunny, are you a league player? Where do you sit on the league stakes?
Look, I'm a bit of a league player, but obviously I care about my overall position. Look, I'm a big fan of exactly what you just said. I think if you're in that 6 to 10 range, you need to go for it because you can't win the premiership if you don't make the finals. But if you're sitting in the top 2 or 3, you could probably hold off, but you know, in the position he's in there, 9 trades, 300K in the bank, and 2 to 3 upgrades left, I'd say go for your upgrades, to be honest. If he's only to take 4, leaves him with 5 trades, then that'll be with 6 weeks to go. I say go for it.
Because 8 trades is ridiculous to have for the final series. I think pretty much no one has that. As an ideal, between 4 to 6 trades, I think would be a good amount for the final series.
I agree, mate. I mean, I actually went into a final series once with 8 trades. Whew. left. I missed every piece of carnage that year. I actually got to the grand final week, and I didn't need to use both, but I did. It was just, you know, one of those lucky situations, I guess. But you're right. I think if you can get into that finals with, say, four trades left, and particularly if you're sitting top four, you win that first week. So you make one trade that week, leaves you with three. You get the, you know, the bye in the second week of the finals, leaves you with three trades for your final two rounds. So you want to try and get yourself into that top four, and then you're safe.
All right, we'll move into the actual trade out targets and trade in targets now. So the first question here is from Reese, or at Reese Usden on Twitter. Marcus Adams, Kerridge, and Petrarca. He can only get rid of two this week. Who stays and who goes? I put this question first because really I want to talk about four players. I think in the back line from the questions that we've got, a lot of people have like a one of Adams or Tipping Woody. In the forward line, a lot of people have one of Kerridge and Petrarca on field. Basically, we want to address which of these four blokes you'd look to trade out first and which of the blokes probably make better keeps for the rest of the season. Of course, this is all pending the number of trades you have, and we've spent up to this point talking about trade. So we've looked at trades and trade numbers and how aggressive you should be first up, and now use that to inform the decision making for these specific players that we're talking about. So we won't really reference the number of trades when assessing these individual players. A lot of these questions were asked before it was revealed that Marcus Adams is out for the next couple, so I'm guessing, you know, if you're trading out of these four now, Marcus Adams is the obvious trade out of these four. But how would you rank the other three, Kerridge, AMT, and Petrarca? Faz?
Now that the buys are out of the way, I ended up keeping Kerridge because I wanted the better cover. But I'd say that I think it's about $60,000-$70,000 difference in price between the two of them. I'd say that Kerridge, just because he's at a higher value, and as you mentioned earlier, there's some pretty decent players that you can almost side swap him to. Probably, yeah, look to move on Kerridge and hold Petrarca for cover.
Out of those four, though, if I had Adams, Tippin Woody, Kerridge, and Petrarca, if I had to move two, I'd be probably moving on Adams and Tippin Woody for me.
I'd agree with that. Donny, I said to have Adams number one, Tipping Woody number two. He dropped 17,000, so he was at like close to 390. He's at 367 now, so that's really not far off Kerridge at all. Out of the four players, Kerridge probably has the highest scoring potential, so even though he's at quite an expensive price at 419,000, if you manage to hold on to him as well as a mid-forward DPP, you know, decent scoring player, he can be a fairly good cover for you as well. I would be tempted to hold on to Kerridge over Petrarca if it didn't make a difference to an upgrade, for example. If it does make a difference to the upgrade, obviously, you know, trade out Kerridge. There's no issue with that. But I think if it doesn't make a difference, you might as well hold on to the better player for cover. If I had Kerridge still as an emergency, I think he would probably loop a hole on for Green, for example, in a few games. So I think he's not the worst player to hang around as well. We'll move on to the next question here from Tim Williams, or at Timoth444. If you had to decide between losing Adams Tipping Woody type or a Kerridge Petrarca type, so losing a player in the back line versus losing a player in the forward line, which would you choose? So I guess this would be people in a situation where they only have seven or eight trades, they can only complete one more upgrade, and they're choosing whether or not to upgrade that back line rookie or the forward line rookie. So even though we just said Adams and Tipper are our number one and number two to trade out, Dunny, how about considering scoring potential of the premiums you trade in? In the back line, arguably, the premiums you trade in aren't going to be as lucrative as the players you trade in the forward line for Kerridge and Petrarca, for example.
Yeah, but you can also flip that argument on its head there, mate, and that's probably what I would look at is your rookies in the forward line, are they going to score better than your rookies in the back line? And I think, for me, I'd be moving on Tipper out of those. If I had to choose between Tipper and Petrarca, I'd be keeping Petrarca and upgrading Tipper because Petrarca's more likely to get you the 50, 60, 70s, whereas Tipper could drop right down to a 30, 40. Whilst you've got to look at, you know, how good the person you're going to bring in is, you know, if you're going to go from, say, a Tipper to a Laird or a Matthew Boyd or someone like that, I'd be doing that over moving on Petrarca. Look at that point difference between the two players rather than just what the premium's going to score. So try and keep the best combination.
So we've talked a lot about trading these rookies out, these marginal rookies that have stayed on field for a lot of coaches that have stayed relatively conservative with their trading. In that bucket, you'd have Tommy Liberatore as well, a player that if you were being conservative about trades, you'd probably keep in your team rather than trade out. Now, with the buys done and dusted, would trading Liber be too luxurious? Understanding that beyond the fact that he's sitting at a relatively healthy price tag. There's also a lot of fallen premiums at the moment. Treloar at 507, even ultra premiums like Parker and Mitchell before they dropped off a little bit. They're at about the 500 mark as well. Hanabry, he's only at 546. Is this the right time to be trading out Libba despite people hanging on for this long? Dunny, I know you're in this position.
Just as you're talking about that there, I was just having a quick look. You know, you could go from Libba to Parker and actually make money. You could look at someone like, I mean, even going up to someone like Rory Sloane, you're only going to be in the hole for 100 grand there. But I think you're right. I think if you haven't got anything glaring that you need to do, I think it is a good time to move on Libba. You know, he's averaging 97, so it's not really what you want from your premium midfield at the end of the season. Does he have the potential to drag that up for the rest of the season? I don't think so. I think that's about where he's going to sit. So for me, I'd look at, if I don't have anything else to do and I've still got 5, 6, 7, 8 trades left, it's not going to cost you, you know, if you've got 30, 40 grand in the bank, you can get him to someone who has probably a higher ceiling than what he's got currently.
I think the more money you have and the better premium you can hit, sort of the better with a side swap. So I wouldn't be too conservative with the side swaps. For example, even though Parker's at a really attractive price tag, he's been a little bit inconsistent this year, whereas Hanabry has been ultra consistent this year. There's only a difference of 5 points in the average, but if you have the cash, because it is a side swap, I would probably be as aggressive as I can on the side swap and try and get as much advantage from that side swap as I can. So I'd be going for the high scoring and the most consistent premium that I can hit with that. But, you know, I very much agree. If you have the ability to trade out Libba, and so that's 6+ trades, I think I'd be quite tempted to do it with a lot of the premium midfielders at very tempting price tags at the moment.
Just one thing on that one, Marcus. I probably would try and get myself into a position where I only had to use one trade to do it, though. I wouldn't be double trading to upgrade him if I didn't have to. But I agree, I'd be going for the best person you can afford, the cash that you've got sitting in the bank.
100% a good call out. You don't actually want to be double trading to hit the best premium you can. We'll move on to the trade-ins for the week then, and we'll start off with comparisons in the midfield. So we had lots of questions, but predominantly they hover around Lachie Neal, Pendlebury, Rory Sloane, and Dan Hanabry. And basically, these are guys that look like they could be in the top 8 midfielders, I think. They're all sort of not fully priced and hold potentially a little bit of value. Lachie Neal, for example, scored 51 in round 12, and as a result of that, he dropped to 558,000, and for a bloke who is averaging 113, that seems like fairly great value. Dan Hanabry averaging 116 due to 92 and 86 in rounds 12 and 13. He's priced at 546,000. Rory Sloane's been on fire, so he's probably the most expensive, and he's currently averaging close to 110, which he's costed at 588,000. And the last player is Scotty Pendlebury, and for me, he's the clear standout. He's at 617,000. An average of 120, and he looks like almost a must-have at this point in the season. Faz, if you had to rank them 1, 2, 3, 4, how would you do that?
I'll probably give Hanabry the number one spot just for the value he presents, and then I'll go Pendlebury, Sloane, and Neal. I'm just not sold on Neal at the moment.
Pretty much the same as Faz. Sloane and Pendlebury for me is a bit of a wash, really, because if you look at the draw that the Crows have on the way home, it's amazing. I think they only play like 2 teams in the top 8 still to come. But if you look at Pendles, he's still got to play Adelaide, North, West Coast, the Dogs, and Hawthorn in his run home. So, and they play Hawthorn in that grand final round. So I really like both. I have both anyway, so it doesn't really bother me. But probably Pendlebury only just because of his history.
I'd have Hanabry at the top because of his price. Pendlebury second because he's a must-have, together with probably Hanabry. He's in that top-level class. Sloane, like you said, has a sick draw. It pains me to say that because Mark now has him in his team. And Neal last. But to be honest, I think Neal gets a little bit of a raw deal there, because at 558,000, his lowest score is 51. His second lowest is 92. His next lowest is 100. That's ridiculous. He's had 2, 4, 6, 7, 8. He's had 9 scores above 109. Absolutely insane.
Do you think we'd all be looking at Neal differently if the Dockers were having a better season, and if he had, say, a Fife in there to take the pressure off him in that midfield, and we thought he was just, you know, running free?
Absolutely, Dunny. I think we're all afraid that if he has a couple more 51s, that drags his average down. But no qualms about it. Like, if he's not being tagged out of a game or he's not having a down game, 110, basically. Mm. And that makes him almost a must-have. So, I 100% agree with you, Dunny. You know, it feels like we're underrating him because he's at Fremantle. You know what, Dunny? I'll shift him ahead of Sloan. He's averaging more than Sloan. He's priced less than Sloan. Neil ahead of Sloan for me. He sold me.
And that 51 that he had, who was that against? Because I think he got tagged right out of a game at one point, didn't he?
Played against Brisbane, so it would have been Robinson, eh?
It was Robinson. Yeah, Robinson tagged him out of that game.
And not every team runs a tagger, as we've flagged earlier in this season. We'll move past the midfielders now. I think we've had enough of a run through those guys. We want to talk about Johannesson quickly because he came back and he did really quite well. He scored 88, was, you know, a little bit quiet to start the game. But when you kick the winning goal, I mean, can't begrudge him too much for his return performance. 452,000 for a player averaging 101 for the season seems good value. Do you blokes think he can continue his early season form?
He's definitely someone I'll be looking at closely this week. What with our Marcus Adams discussion earlier. My highest priced rookie at the moment is Ruggles. If I downgrade Ruggles, it'd be nice to not have to spend all the money that I get from the downgrade on upgrading Adams. And that's where Johannesson really presents some value there. If he can, I don't even need him to be scoring 100. If he gets a 95, I'd be over the moon to be able to, you know, only pay 450,000 for him. Looked great in all the games he's played this year, so I don't see why he can't do that.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I think he's got a pretty good run home as well. Geelong and North, they're the only top eight teams that he's got. With a break even sitting at 86, yeah, he should be able to achieve that against Richmond this week. But an 86 break even means he's not going to skyrocket, you know, if he scores himself 100 anyway. So you probably can afford to take that extra week and have a look at him, Faz. But I'd certainly be comfortable bringing him back in a couple of weeks or next week if he has a good game this week.
All right, we'll move on to rookies to round out the show. Year of the Mile wants us to talk about downgrade options. So we'll talk through the five players here that are on track to play this week, potentially, if they continue to be selected. Mitch Brown came back for his return game from injury. He's priced at 133,000, but of course, we've seen his limited scoring potential being a key backman. He scored 48. Nathan Broad at 117,000 is at least that cheap basement sort of price. He scored 66 and 53. Corey Wagner in the midfield for North Melbourne. There's been quite a few injuries in the North Melbourne team. He scored 34-49 leading up to the byes. Jack Silvani, third generation Carlton player, he played his debut game as well, scored 70, plays in the forward line, which a lot of people will be looking for, at 117,000. And then Matthew Hamelman played the game before the bye, probably didn't play the best game, had a few turnovers, but he's a back forward, and so can provide flexibility for Tipping Woody or Adams as a swing player. He's at 117,000. So now that we're off the byes, job security is arguably a little bit less important. You might be able to hide one of these blokes. Any particularly strong thoughts about any of these five players?
With this lot of players, nobody sort of jumps off the page as being a guy that you must have. I know that the talk about Jack Silvani is that he's probably not quite ready for AFL footy, despite a nice score on the weekend. I think his fitness still has a bit of a way to go, so I think they might only give him a couple more games for the rest of the year. So I guess Nathan Broad looks all right, just with Richmond probably out of finals contention now. Hopefully for his sake and for anyone that picks him up, that they might just look to blood some more youth and hopefully he can play the majority of the rest of the season.
You beat me to most of that, Faz. That's pretty much what I was going to say about Broad. I agree. I mean, I was listening to a podcast today and they were, I think it was from the Super Footy guys, and they were saying that Hardwick's come out and said, well, you know, we're going to have to start having a look at some of these guys. So I think Broad might get a few games and see how that happens. But I actually broke every Supercoach rule in the book last week and actually brought in Silvani for his debut game. Basically needed someone cheap that was actually playing to bring in. So, and forward line was probably the best spot for me to do it. So pretty happy with his 70, but I think you hit the nail on the head there earlier, mate. Job security is not a massive issue anymore. You know, you want someone who's probably going to play, but for me, I put him in the forward line where I've got Petrarca sitting on the bench who, well, when Barlow comes back, Petrarca will be sitting on the bench who is probably going to play every game for the rest of the season unless he gets injured anyway. So now's probably the time you can start to look and think, well, if I downgrade to this guy and he only plays 2 or 3 weeks, have I got other cover? If I've got other cover, then yeah, no dramas.
Yeah, I think in the back line, it sort of depends whether you want job stability or you're looking for more higher scoring potential. If you have, for example, a Caden Brand who hasn't played many games this year, Mitch Brown might actually look more attractive than Broad because, you know, you're at least a little bit more sure that he's going to play if you need him. It might only be 50 points, but it's 50 points you might not get if you pick somebody with poorer job security. If you're in a position where you have Collins, for example, then Broad looks a lot more attractive than Brown. If you're looking for a midfielder, you might even consider an MPP player instead of Wagner. And if you're considering a forward line player, again, it depends whether you want to go with job security or you want to go with MPP flexibility, in which case you go with Hamelman. Or if you just want scoring potential but not job security, then maybe you go with a key position forward like Silvani. He could score 70, but he might not play as well. So, I mean, it really, at this point of the season, you kind of need to look at the rookies you have on field and make a call on whether or not you're after job security, scoring potential, or DPP, MPP flexibility.
Yeah, and just further to that one, mate, I mean, in my situation, I've got Petrarca sitting there in the forward line, but I've also got Tom Phillips sitting in the midfield. So if I need to throw Petrarca into the midfield as a backup, you know, you can do that. So when you've got that MPP capability set up fairly well, it means that last position, like so your F8 or your M9 or whatever number we're up to, M10, doesn't really make so much difference, you know, once you're doing that.
Yeah. So to round out this week's show, let's do a captain's corner, fellas. Faz, why don't we start with you? Who's your captain for the week, or vice-captain-captain combo?
Got a few more options this week, don't we? They're not as hamstrung as we're across the bye, so I think I'll go with Danger on Friday night against the Swans. It's a big opponent, but Danger's delivered some big scores so far this year, so I think you want to see what he's got to begin with. And I'll go with Gaz in the Q clash against the Brisbane Lions. I think he could go big this weekend, so he'll be my backup captain.
I'll probably do the same as what Faz just mentioned, but just to throw another combination or another couple of combinations out there for people, you could look at potentially Heath Shaw against the Pies as your vice-captain, and then you could go into Gaz in the Q clash, or you could potentially look at someone like Sloan against Carlton on the Sunday afternoon. But for me, I'll personally be going Danger against Sydney, followed by Gaz in the Q clash.
I'm going to echo both your sentiments and go with the exact same thing. Danger into Ablett looks like a pretty sweet combination this week. So I think the last 2 weeks we've delivered scores of like Danger 170 and Pendlebury 160. Hopefully this continues on to this week and we just get another bogusly big score for our captain's corner. Before we end the show, we'll plug our Facebook and Twitter accounts. Don't forget you can ask us questions via social media on a Tuesday. And on Patreon, we're at patreon.com/supercoachcoachfan. Anyone who can help out with the running cost of the show, very much appreciated. And we're releasing a Patreon exclusive season review show just to say thank you to our subscribers. So if you're interested in that, you can head over to patreon.com/supercoachcoach. It's been fantastic to have both of you guys on in FB Donkey's absence, and it's good to hear you guys both made some climbs over the bye period. So do you guys have any sort of finishing thoughts to leave our listeners with for the show?
Just hope everyone's got their teams pretty much fully upgraded now, and my advice would be try and save a couple of trades for the last few weeks, but once you get to 4 weeks out, then just go for it.
Yep, that sounds good, Danny. I'll put that into practice. I think I'll be making a couple this week, I think, to turn Adams into a bona fide premium, and hopefully there's enough cash left over for carriage to someone the week after.
Nothing particularly to add. Just enjoy having your full teams back, everyone. I know I'm certainly looking forward to that. And especially because a lot of people did some upgrades throughout the buys. I think this is the first time you get to see, you know, your full completed sort of side put together, especially those people completing their upgrades this week. It's always an exciting time when you can march out your full team. So enjoy. All the best this week. And we'll catch you again next week for round 17. See ya.
See you, everyone.
See you, guys. Don't want to make me crazy. Don't want to make me crazy.